show. I'm Dick Champagne. I'm Davey.
It's 9 a.m. here, and if I had some champagne, I'd be drinking. I hate to admit that I just didn't have time to run to the liquor store this morning.
Probably not open.
But you know what, Dave can can drink.
I'll drink for the both of us, Chris. Don't you
anyway, worry. Don't let that diminish from the fact that I'm very excited here. This is in a grand tradition of milestone moments here on Chop Talk Show. We're going to have a special show for 300. It's special
on
in
and
that
on, a podcast to remember. On and on, a podcast to remember.
Yes. Yes. I feel good about it. It's also a grand tradition that we do something special, but not too special. It's not like we invited like 30 of our friends to join us on a yacht while we're live recording or anything.
I will be doing Paul Irish impressions this episode.
I was really digging back through some old photos and found my... I used to have a shirt that said, oh my God, I think I saw Paul Irish on the street.
No way, t-shirt. Really?
Yeah, I don't know where the heck that went. It was one of my favorite shirts.
We should reprint those. And it's got to be like a plaid shirt with that. So anyway, hey, Chris, what do we got going on today? I thought we kind of made some notes, and I think the kind of theme is sort of like then and now, I think, you know, kind of
it is.
Back.
And we started out 2018 with like predictions for 2018. So I don't think we need to rehash that, but we should take this, you know, milestone moment, 300 moment to maybe compare what it was like. The day we started this podcast, like episode zero, and what it's like now at episode 300, not like internal how we do things, but what about the industry, you know, thinking more about our business and our lives and the web and all that stuff, comparing then and now, that seems good. And then maybe talking about like, what is the world going to be like in episode 600?
Whoa.
That'd be weird. Take a stab at that. So maybe we're like interviewing each other in a way.
Hey, huh? That works out. So let's conduct this interview responsibly. Chris, I think the first thing we kind of thought about was like, we should start with ourselves, right? And then get into tech stuff. But like, what's different and not different about you? Well, in the last 6 years, what's different and not different?
Well, I think I'm just like, you know, just slowly trying to catch up to you is the idea. I feel like, I think you had zero of your babies, right? In 2012 or did you
2012 have, I had zero babies. 2013 I had one baby towards the middle end, and then 2015 had another baby. So
yeah, so it happened quickly after we started, but the day we started this podcast, neither of us had babies. You had a wife. I did not, but I've been married and had a kid since then, and to me quite recently. And I put that there not because like that changes the industry in some way. It absolutely doesn't, but it changes you in profound ways, and that I'm not the same person I was at episode zero for sure.
I think that it's been interesting to watch you have relationships, not, and then, you know, ultimately fall in love and marry and have a kid with Miranda. So that's just wonderful. We probably don't talk about our personal lives that much, but that's what a wonderful thing. I think it, you know, maybe didn't, you know, I think just relationships or whatever, it was just sort of like a hard road for you, but then I think it worked out in the end in 6 years, which doesn't sound like a long time, but it probably felt like a long time.
Yeah. So. But, and that it changes, what it changes is profound, and what it doesn't change is just as interesting. It doesn't mean that we stopped doing the show. It doesn't mean that we stopped being web developers. It doesn't mean that we stopped trying to stay on top of the industry as best as we can. You know, we still get to be who we are. But have this kind of life change behind it, I think is cool. And I'm sure other people, I think we've even heard from our guests a number of times about our guests and our listeners and people who've written in questions that like, you know, does my business life change when my family changes is the subtext, if not the direct text of what they're asking. And it's cool to live through it and tell people that it doesn't have to if you don't want it to. I mean, if you want to use your family as an excuse to change other parts of your life too, I think that's great. But we both lived through it and didn't necessarily have to do that.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I mean, I think for me, like family, I'm thinking over the last 6 years, I was very like, oh, I'm going to put this up on GitHub. I'm going to open source, you know, do that. And now that I have two kids, it's like the number of things I just want to open source goes way down. I think I'm now more into the, like, I'm just going to put this idea in a code pen, and if somebody wants to run with it, that is freaking awesome. But I'm just not doing, I'm not maintaining.
It seems like the way you've used your free time has shifted over the years as well. Like, you're perhaps even more fun focused now than you were then.
No, I think the like limitation that children introduced is, you know, I now my time, my fun bank is cut in half at least. You know, I go to work and then come home to like screaming kids. That's fine. But then then you have to go and like right into dinner, bath, bed. Like, and then like if you can keep your eyes open, it's like, all right, now I got like a couple few hours I can kind of mess around with something. Like, that's like, you know, that's tough, and you have to kind of prioritize. And for me, I think it's manifested in like dumb little, I don't know, code pen tricks, kind of like CSS tricks. It's code pen tricks.
Sure.
Just, you know, and I think that's been a fun like experiment, and, you know, that bleeds into work and stuff too a bit. But yeah, it's like you kind of have to pick your battles, you know.
So back in 2012, it was actually January of 2012, kind of a clean start of the year, was when we launched this show. And so thinking back on my life, I was somewhat new to Palo Alto. I was living out there because of the thing of working at SurveyMonkey or whatever. And I was still working there at that time for a good chunk of that year. So that was my life and what I was experiencing. And
because WooFoo started in, or got acquired in like 2011, right?
Yeah. Like early-ish spring. Yeah. And then it was a few months after that, like fall, when we made the move to Palo Alto, and then we kicked off this show. So I guess I can picture the room I was in my little duplex I lived in Palo Alto, doing the show from there. And then it was not that much longer when I moved. It was about 1 year later, I guess, from then I moved to Milwaukee. And so most of Shop Talk Show I recorded in when I was living in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, yeah.
And only just recently moved out here to Bend. So mostly that. But think of, you know, when we first launched the show too, business-wise, I guess I was at SurveyMonkey and had CSS tricks, but CodePen did not exist at that time. It just wasn't a thing on Earth.
Like a prototype on Alex's computer or something, or Tim's computer.
Maybe, yeah. The alpha-ish thing was summer of 2012. So that significantly changed too, in that, you know, my evolution as a developer and all the things I do professionally really, I would say, kicked off in 2012. Because it was when I was leaving there too, of SurveyMonkey, and kind of going off on my own, that's when I did that Kickstarter too, which was also fall of 2012. In that Kickstarter, the theme for it was, you know, help me build a new version of the site or whatever, because I'm going off and trying to make this more of a full-fledged part of my career, essentially, in business, as the assessor. And then recording the videos and giving them to people and all the stuff that was involved with that Kickstarter. But that was when CSS really got serious for me, was back then, too. So how interesting, you know, CodePen and treating CSS tricks more seriously and really taking the show more seriously too, was like, shoot, this is a part of what I do. We got to take this seriously too. And
yeah, I think it was 2013 or something. I think you kind of were like, I've narrowed down the three things I do to CodePen, CSS tricks, and Shop Talk Show, which I'm honored to be in that bunch. But you know, I think it all fits into the Chris Coyer brand package, but it's,
nothing has changed since then. Things have evolved.
Yeah, that's what you're doing.
Stuck. Yeah, that's what I do. That's what I intend to do.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so back for you in 2002, that was a seminal moment for Paraval and your business enterprise too, because probably one of your more notorious projects was happening.
Yeah, so we, in 2012, it was South by 2012, our friend Nishant Kothari, who worked at Microsoft on the like Mix, I don't know if it's even still around, but it was like a Channel 9 operation. Nishant came up and said, hey, you know, guys, I want to talk to you about possibly doing the Microsoft homepage. And we, you know, three dudes from Texas were just like, is this for real? Because this feels like a joke. But yeah, we flew out in April, I think, to start working on the Microsoft homepage. And it was kind of like we just worked real hard that summer, and I think launched in that fall, or kind of prototyped and over the summer, and then launched that fall kind of around the Windows 8 launch. That was a big change for Paravel, because it went from, you know, pretty small clients, you know, like, to now very large clients within very longer timelines. And, you know, kind of we've kind of moved from like handoffs.
Yeah, like,
to, so,
like, let's talk about that. What did it change? Yeah. Like, did it change the public perception of Paravel? Certainly, I'm sure there's lots of people that thought of you as a very good design agency anyway, but if you can prove that you can work for one of the biggest tech companies there is and successfully launch a big ticket item for them, that must have changed the trajectory of Paravel in a way.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there are tax documents to prove the change in direct trajectory, but it's definitely I think it just, even like the doors, I guess, that now open to us, or that we, you know, have, we talk with people that we talk with, has changed dramatically. And I would actually factor in a bit of Shop Talk show here. I mean, we've talked to hundreds, that's wild to say, but we've talked to hundreds of amazing people who are excellent at their craft and like run businesses kind of now and are way up top in venture capital firms and things like that. And so that's been good too, as far as Paravel is concerned. But I think that moment with working with Microsoft in 2012 really sort of changed like our trajectory as a company. I mean, it's always that thing where like, you just never know in client services if you're going to be open in 3 months. You know, you're just like,
oh man.
I think everyone still has that fear or worry or trauma, but yeah, you just don't know. And so, but it's also like, you know, I think without getting into too much financial detail, like we did smart things with we didn't just like cut each other checks and like buy yachts, or because it wasn't that kind of money. But what we did do is like set up like a doomsday fund at Paravel. And it was just like, if like the well goes dry, like and that's just added so much security, you know, because I can like, you know, if you know, a client, you know, quits on us or we leave or whatever, it's more of like, it's a cushion, and that relaxes, I think, all of us. It doesn't mean that we're just going to like be out on the street, which has happened to like Reagan and I in the past. So it's a little wild. So
I think that's pretty cool, and probably not a lot of agencies and not enough of them do that kind of thing. So you have like a salary and you earn it, and that's what you can count on, right? It's not like this massive roller coaster of ups and downs with money. It's like, we earn this much money and the business has. I think that would feel good to me. That's even how I, of course, run my own business with just me as a full-time employee on CSS Tricks, is I earn a salary from it, and there's a business account too. And if there's extra money in there, which there never is, but let's say there was, that can grow, and I'm okay with that. I don't need to extract every single dollar that's sitting in that account into my personal account. That's a business. It should have its own coffers. And then I know what I can count on each month. And doesn't mean you can't reevaluate raises or ever take money out of it, but it seems like should you have a heyday, that's okay that business account, all that means is extra secure. It's great.
Just having like backup funds, so you know you can, you know, if you pick up a subcontractor like on CSS Tricks, I'm sure you pay people to write articles, you know, you're never going to be the like in like a Ponzi scheme or something where you have to like get money, you know, and write like an article in order to pay like an author or something like that, you know, like it's just nice. It's nice to be in a little have a cushion. So that just eliminates a lot of stress from a business standpoint. So.
Cheers to that.
Yeah.
Ching.
Chris Enns is going to hate that.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Keep drinking.
Business wise, fuel the podcast. Lots of changes. Family wise, lots of changes. The champagne is still the same.
Quite literally might be from 2012, like a housewarming gift from like 2000.
You blow the dust off that one.
It's been different. Like, so I went from working in like that Microsoft homepage made it in like the spare bedroom of our house, like the second bedroom, which is now the kids' room, but it was like our second bedroom, and it was had a bed in there. It was covered in dog hair from my little pup Rudy, who's now just an old gray dog now, kind of. But she, and then my internet connection, I wrote this down because I remembered it. It was like 10 megabits a second back then, you know, like cable modem. I remember
that's
the day.
Very bad. It's just over, I guess it's a megabyte a second. Is that, it seems awful.
Yeah, 10 Mbps or whatever. I mean, it just, you know, it would take a while to, you know, I mean, I guess you're like MP3 a second, but like a video takes a while or whatever, but like, now I have fiber in the house and it's like 1 gig, you know, to the,
yeah,
I'm mainlining 1 gig. And it, just to say, like, in 6 years, my internet has like gone up two orders of magnitude is pretty intense, you know?
It is. I wonder if that, if we're in for that again. I wonder, yeah, it seems like we're getting to the point where people don't, you don't care that much. It's almost a commodity. And again, we're talking about big cities ish in the United States or whatever. I'm sure there's bandwidth, talking about bandwidth worldwide is a much more nuanced issue and people don't enjoy those speeds as much. But I would hope that it would be kind of cool if we could say that about the entire world. If your internet speed is what it is, wait 5 years, it'll go up two orders of magnitude. That'd be awesome if that happened to the whole world.
I don't think it's a linear thing for most people. So, but I don't know. That's just interesting. And back then, you know, I think I had the 3G iPhone and now I have a 4G something super phone, whatever. So it's kind of a wild deal, but yeah. And then I also wrote down, through my conference speaking, I started doing that actually in like 2012 at Front End Design Conf in St. Petersburg. We were both at,
Was that your first one ever too?
No, we were both at, I did like local meetup speaking and stuff like that before,
yeah.
But we were at, Converge SE in 2011, I think that's where we first met.
Pre-shop talk show. Yeah. In Columbia.
Yeah. And Paravel we did like a little panel, like sketch basically about web fonts and, you know, like kind of like pixel perfect design sort of stuff, you know, yeah. It was fun, but it was that next year I really started like working and speaking, and thanks to Dan Denny for taking a chance on me. But, since then I've had opportunities to speak in Hawaii and Germany and Oxford, England, New York, San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, New Orleans, and like tons more places. So that's just really cool to me. I don't know. I have this thing. When I met my wife, Jessie, she was in a band called Bodies of Water. Go check them out. They're very Tropicale funk. It's good. But they, and I get royalties if you like listen to them. So I get like 10 cents, but, my wife was in a band and it was like around that time, 2007-y, I was like, I played guitar or whatever, and I was like trying to be in bands, but like they'd never go anywhere. We'd play like one show and spin out, you know? And I was always like, oh, I wish I was like in a band that toured. That would be so cool. But I think it was like 2007, where I just was like, you know, I'm just going to do computers instead of being in a band that tours or trying like put all my effort into just doing computers. And what I think is neat is in some ways I now have the opportunity to tour, quote unquote, like go speak at conferences. But I'm not in a band and I don't have to carry around guitar gear and sit in a van with six sweaty dudes. So that's great. So, but it's been interesting to like ramp up speaking. And now it's kind of taking me all over the place.
Since we started the show, it looks like I've been to similar, you know, I went to Warsaw, Poland once. That was cool. Vancouver, Canada, San Francisco, Tallahassee, Florida, New York, Hawaii, New Zealand. My gosh, you know, it's amazing. Yeah, all over the U.S. You know, our speaking careers have been kind of interesting, you know?
Yeah, no, I think I think around that time it's kind of ramped up, you know, and I mean,
yeah, it's easier in some ways and harder in others, you know, as part of a conversation just yesterday about workshops and how just everybody is so is nervous about giving those. It's one of those things where you'd think after all these years and all these shows that we could just talk about anything. Like, a workshop should be simple. And I'm like, I can't even give one. If I was, you know, if my life depended on it, you know, tomorrow, do I have a workshop that I think is really good and worth giving? I mean, I could sit there and talk about the web all day, but I'm not sure I have like a narrative to give right now. I just don't have it.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I ask people who do workshops, like Valhead or Brad Frost, or I'm just like, how do you do it? Cause I'm just very interested in how you perform a successful workshop. And I was going to say, totally, Kevin Hoffman has a new book coming out about meetings, so I'm interested in that for the same reasons. But yeah, workshops are kind of a mysterious thing. Like, how do you like balance like skill levels and then also like feeling like education, but also like people feeling like they walked away with the skill? That's tough. That's tough to me.
Tricky is, you know, making sure they often are a bit expensive, but shouldn't be like insanely expensive, I think. So this sort of striking a balance there is interesting too. I'm living it now. I mean, thinking of big changes, I'd never thought I'd be running an event of my own. And that's happening this summer at the CodePen World's Fair, which we have 4 workshops at. So, that's a big deal. That's a very big difference of, you know, thinking of 2012 and thinking about baby little CodePen to let's throw an event. Shit.
Yeah, now you're 6 years later. You got meetups all over the world, and now you're doing a big event. So that'll be fun.
So what's not different, though? I mean, those are, I don't know, fairly, of course we evolve and things change over 6 years. And those, I think the things we talked about are, you know, interesting and worth noting. But just as interesting as maybe, like, what hasn't changed? Like, we still do this show. Apparently there's still stuff to talk about, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, things are like the endless drama cycle which fuels the Shop Talk show has not stopped, so that's nice. You know, there's always web drama to kind of hash through, but yeah, I don't know, some stuff is not super different.
The drama thing is interesting. We could, there probably is room in the podcast market for dev drama show, and we've like joked about that, I guess, over the years. We used to have the hot drama sound effect and all that stuff. But we always, like, every time we ever did it, we tried to provide like a balanced, nuanced, it's complicated answer to it. We'd never, yep. I don't think either of us are that hot on weighing in heavily on one side of a dramatic dev issue.
Oh, how do you be like?
I would say partially because usually the answer is a little more gray area, you know? Sometimes I laugh at people with too much absolution and how things can go down. But certainly, but you know, we could have ran that show, you know?
Like certainly. The Hannity of web drama. Oh man, yeah.
Maybe there should be like a Judge Judy one too, where you invite both sides,
and somebody makes a
iron fist, make them talk. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Oh man, that's good.
Oh, I saw a hot one just this week about it was about View Source. It was like a classic Tom Dale, who's, you know, the internet's most perfect troll. Sometimes, you know, yeah, like he's very smart and does lots of cool things, but is not afraid of having like a super strong opinion and just blasting it all over hell.
Yeah. that was interesting. For those, it was Frank Camaro wrote an article about I forget what the title of the article was, but it was just everything kind of like
hard as easy as hard again or something like that. I'm weighing in on it. I have an article this week coming out because it was such a wonderful article, I think, and everybody latched on to different pieces of it. But Frank did make a comment about View Source in it, which I didn't address in my response because I didn't feel the need to say something about that. But it's not just Frank. I think I've heard that sentiment every year for my whole life, which is basically the value of View Source. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is it valuable? I guess Tom's point was it was and has stopped being so vital.
Yeah. Well, and I think Tom is in the camp of like the compiled web of future, you know, just and that's kind of like where, you know, now your framework now generates your HTML and generates all your CSS classes and generates, you know, like it's.
Yeah. To the point of if you literally viewed source, it would just be gibberish. And not useful. And there's people out there that have the opinion that that's a huge problem and that's going to stifle people learning the web these days. And so I think everyone has a point in a way, and you know, they can, it feels like a holy war kind of thing. So certainly that could be a podcast episode. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Roll Bar, longtime wonderful sponsor of Shop Talk Show. Rollbar.com/Shop Talk Show, which is how you get the free Bootstrap plan on them. Very generous and very cool. It's about tracking errors in your web application. If you find that some action or URL or something on your app is triggering like a page ruining 500 error or something, you shouldn't be waiting for an email about that to find out. That's on you. You need to be figuring that out. You shouldn't be looking through logs and crap. You instantly know what's broken and why with Rollbar. So there's some extra cool features in Rollbar that you should know about. One of them is source maps. So if you ship source maps with your code to your apps, which is usually just like part of a build process, not that hard of a thing to do, Rollbar supports using those source maps to get meaningful stack traces while still using like minified code for your actual like production JavaScript, which is great. And the telemetry feature. So JavaScript telemetry gives a timeline of browser events leading up to an error. It's like a black box recorder, like in airplanes, but for when your web app crashes. So you just have lots of contacts. You know exactly what went wrong when something goes wrong. That's incredibly vital for any web app. You can integrate it into your workflow really easily. You can have errors sent to Slack or HipChat or Jira or whatever. Integrating into your app is just a few lines of code. It's just a miracle product. Check it out, rollbar.com/shoptalkshow.
Well, I thought it'd be good to go into our next segment here. Then yes. And now on the web.
Yes, yes.
Look at things from like technologies, you know, that were popular or whatever in 2012 and look at what's kind of happening now and just kind of compare, contrast and see what, I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose we could be like, is this still talked about or has it totally been like wiped from the face of dev earth?
Yeah, has it disappeared or ghosted or been replaced? I think that's another thing too. I mean,
sure.
So I think CSS 2012, I think our first like 400 episodes were about SAS versus less, right?
Yeah. Like, which one is that, so SAS or less? Has that SAS been wiped from the face of dev earth or not?
And I wrote it SAS all caps because when SAS started, it was all caps. And then somebody less changed
was too,
mind.
Wasn't it? Maybe not. Yeah. Eventually they've both lowercased. So.
No, anyway, so SAS all caps versus less was a huge one. And then there was a lot of like, should I even use it or how do I even get on, you know? And
absolutely,
I apologize. There are people, Chris, who are like, I just started listening to Shop Talk Show and I'm working my way back. And I'm just like, please don't.
I would say this one is not wiped from the face of the earth. Maybe not so much SAS versus less because I feel like, not to introduce drama to the show, but SAS is always was, I think, and still is wildly more popular than less. Although I think back and then I think that's so funny. It's still in the news because less just dropped less 3.0. I happened to see it was rather unceremonious, but they fixed a bunch of longstanding bugs, I think, and added some features potentially. But and what you'd think of less has always been written in JavaScript that it maybe would have emerged as the winner in a sense. And I feel like if now that SAS 3.0 is out, even if it's unceremonious or whatever, the story of what is the canonical less and what is the future of less, it seems almost a little cleaner to me than SAS. Just internally, we're thinking about how we're going to handle SAS going forward at CodePen, and it's much messier. It's very unclear like what exactly is going to, what is the canonical SAS? What is actually going to move forward with SAS? What is the real story about getting off Ruby on SAS? Is there ever going to be a point in which a non-Ruby SAS is absolutely identically compatible with Ruby SAS? Because that doesn't seem to be where we're at today. It seems much more muddled. So a clean, just like, hey, this thing works in all JavaScript environments, preprocessor, it's no wonder that there's some popularity of those. And I wonder if at some point that type of CS preprocessing will overtake it. And the same part of the story is that preprocessing CSS at all seems to be dropping off at least a little bit.
Yeah, I think like post-processor has kind of happened, you know, like I don't, I've actually kind of more or less tried to quit using SaaS, and that sounds like extreme behavior, but it's just kind of like, I like the partial aspect of SaaS and all that, but I've just, there's a lot of it that is kind of, you know, I like partials, nesting, and variables. Those are three pieces I like. And so custom properties and CSS, I needed a lot less, you know, with, I don't know, theoretically HTTP2, you can like load CSS as needed, you know, a little bit more. Yeah. So maybe you don't need partials and nesting that much. But that all said, I think like I'm trying to use it less because it does kind of require an extra step or whatever, but that's just me. But it's died down,
but it's not wiped off the face of the earth, that particular conversation, yeah. I'd say. Huh?
Yeah. But even more so, I kind of wrote like a few things down, like what was kind of hot topics, like font face was a big thing, and WAF, having access to WAF was kind of like, whoa, wow, amazing. Like
if anything, that's heated up, I'd say, that topic.
Mm-hmm. Now we have WAF too. I wrote down CSS reset because that was like very earlier, but that's what everyone is using. And I feel like a lot of people have kind of moved towards a more normalized model, you know, and even me.
That's starting to feel old even these days. So CSS reset was the idea of kind of like wiping away all of styles. That was still incredibly popular, but very, you know, it's very much the probably kind of the default way to go then. And yeah, normalized came along later. Yeah. What were you going to say?
Well, I mean, for me, it's like I almost quit using it entirely, both of them, because I kind of just do star box sizing border box, and that gets me like most of the way. I mean, and you know, you specify your button sizes, and that, you know, like you kind of hard code those, and like that does most of it.
You know, it's like tempting once in a while to look through what modern resets are doing and be like, okay, I kind of get it. And the fact that it's only like a couple of kilobytes of code, you're like, yeah, it doesn't hurt to have this in the project anyway. It depends. Yeah. So you should, you know, take a look up and down. But normalize changed the face of resets for sure, saying more like, let's not wipe away everything, but instead just try to bring together what the defaults already are. And that gave, you know, sanitize was based on it, and sanitize is just kind of a more opinionated version of it. Like it wasn't afraid to set box sizing border box on it, but still do what normalize did. And it's still, even that's definitely a conversation that's still around, because modern Bootstrap 4 dropped with their own new reset in it called Reboot, I think. And I just saw one just this week called Modernize Normalize or something that was a take on normalize being, but even the Bootstrap one is based on normalize too. So normalize was influential in itself, but all these new modern resets are based on it.
Yeah.
No, it's totally still a topic.
Yeah. But then HTML5 boilerplate was a big thing.
Huge. But that day still has a billion stars, doesn't it?
I'm sure. I mean, I probably still use it if I like get into a jam and I'm like, where does car set go? I know I'm supposed to have meta car set or something, or lang. Anyway, so I'm just like, where does car set go?
So icon, it's reference Bonsworth material, but it's certainly not as hot. Yeah. Like this is the closest topic I'd say that's somewhat close to gone.
Gone. Yeah. Icon fonts was a huge deal, but, but now, because that was kind of tied to the WAF explosion, OOCSS was big and popular. But I think is still applicable. OOCSS Max. I love those principles, but that's kind of given birth to like this modularity in CSS discussion, where you get like pattern libraries and things like that. And I think even in addition to that, in 2018 here, like atomic utility libraries.
Okay, so that was 2012. Cool. Now we're going to move to 2018. What has been supplanted here? What are the new topics?
Yeah, I mean, I think like I wrote down atomic utility libraries are kind of the big thing. Like I worked with a client recently and they had like, you know, an atomic library basically. And I just was like, how do I add margin to this thing? And it's like, MB2, you know, margin bottom two. And I was like, okay. And you have to like play with things a few times to like figure out like how things like kind of lay out, you know. And that was difficult, but it was also fine. But I just was writing CSS and HTML shorthand, kind of, you know, which is fine.
Sure. So these exist, and I would say I'm fascinated by it too, to some degree. I have lots to say about them, I would say, although coming at from a theoretical standpoint and not a production project, because I don't have a production project that's ever used atomic stuff. Not that I'm not interested or would do it if I did client work and something came along, I certainly wouldn't shy away from it. But you can't avoid the fact that it's a hot topic. There's lots of them. There's lots of people talking about them. There's lots of people using them. So as far as a 2018 topic and a change from 2012, yes, that was a good call, is putting this atomic CSS stuff in there.
I mean, there's things like Bootstrap and Foundation didn't even exist back then, and now they do, and now they're, you know, pretty popular. I mean, they're kind of like I think it's almost like alternatives to writing your own CSS. Those like didn't exist other than like themes, you know, from ThemeForest. Like now it's like you have like whole like frameworks to build out your website, which I think is,
you know, I wonder if it feels like they're headed to a direction of, it's not a hot topic, but they're at peak popularity. Doesn't that seem like that happens sometimes to technology or even things outside of like the cycle of popularity of something is when it almost stops being a hot conversation. It doesn't mean that its usage is low. It means that it's probably like peaking almost. I wouldn't doubt that that's happening to major frameworks like Bootstrap and Foundation. Their usage is probably at peak right now.
Yeah. No, it's probably in, you know, I think Bootstrap just launched a themes thing. So it's kind of breaking apart that myth that all Bootstrap sites look the same, you know? So, and I think you wrote down CSS and JavaScript is a thing.
Well, it seems related to me to atomic CSS in a way of like, the topic is, can we rethink how styling happens? And atomic CSS is one of those rethinkings of how styling can happen on a site. And it's kind of different in nature, but fundamentally similar. CSS and JavaScript is a huge topic, and it can be done so many different ways. We've talked about it plenty in the past. It's extremely interesting to me. I think it's a perfectly usable solution in a lot of situations. But the root of it is, can we not only rethink it, but the implementation of styling in a way that feels safer long term for an app?
I was
bleeding of styles and then, you know, not bleeding things into the global scope and that kind of thing in balance with things that you do want to do that. So it seems.
Yeah. I was in a Twitter conversation last night and, you know, it's like the cascade is obsolete was sort of the assertion. And it was like, okay, go on. What are you looking for? And, you know, there's big demand. And I think this is kind of gets into like what's changed in JavaScript, but there's big demand for like JavaScript like encapsulation, you know, where like variables defined in this or styles defined in this component don't change the styles defined in component B, you know. So if you change the like style of a strong tag or something, it doesn't change the style of all strong tags, you know. So which I feel like we had with scoped styles, waka waka, but yeah, it's kind of interesting. Just that people are trying the CSS and JavaScript. And I think I read a post by Robin Rendell on CSS modules on CSS Tricks the other day.
Mm-hmm. And that one's still pretty popular, I think. CSS modules has gone through lots of changes even since Robin wrote that article, but it's a way that you can wrap your mind around pretty quickly of how scoped styles can work. And I think it scopes it from both sides. Like it helps you in your HTML to write a class that's basically gibberish, and then that class is echoed in your CSS, which is basically gibberish, so that those styles only affect those things. But yeah, the cascade being dead thing just seems like an eye-rolly moment to me. Be like, this is obviously useful and I understand what your problems are with it, but like I'm not going to set font family on 650 DOM elements. It's not appropriate use of it by setting it once on the body and having those fonts cascade through. At least that's how the word cascade works in my brain. No, is obviously the way that should work. And yes, there are styles that should be scoped. So I wrote this in my 2018 future of web stuff thing that styling makes sense to me to happen in both places. I'm explicitly writing a global style, or I'm explicitly writing a local style. And every step that happens in these conversations seems to be getting closer to that to me.
All right. We're about 1/10 of the way through our 300-minute podcast special here. All right,
this is fun, though. What else is happening in 2018?
Okay. Then and now, JavaScript.
The only conversation these days is new JavaScript, TM.
Well, we should talk about that, because I think we had a note here. I skipped over it, but like, what's not different from different and not different? Our previous segment.
Well, people talked about progressive enhancement back then, and they still do now, and that's often centered around JavaScript.
Yeah, but you wrote like HTML and CSS haven't super changed, and I had to agree with that. I mean, CSS 3 was the last big like wow moment for CSS. You know, there's display grid happening, which seems super relevant, and you know, variable fonts, which we talked about recently as well. But like, it seems like all development resources have been put onto new JavaScript APIs and in modernizing the JavaScript engine.
I could see that. Yeah, it doesn't feel like even older than 2012. I mean, my skills of being able to look at a design and kind of convert it into HTML with nice selectors and have those selectors serve me in CSS and style and do layout and do everything that I needs to get done, that doesn't feel that different to me since the day I started doing it.
Yeah. Like, you still see the same thing, or like, it's still the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So then and now JavaScript. Here's, I know this cause I've been kind of working on like a 2012 refactor, of a big app. And, let me just riff off some things that are inside this, this thing, Modernizer, which is still around, still valuable, but I don't think it's like guaranteed you include it in every project anymore. Right. I don't know. Maybe you're different.
Modernizer? No.
Modernizer. Yeah. No. That's right. You know, Yep Nope, which became part of Modernizer. That's an Alex Sexton library. Right.
Yeah.
Still pretty valuable, actually. Script loading was kind of the big topic, right? Like LabJS and all that.
It was cool. I totally got it back then and would like play with it and make demos and stuff in it, and never had the pleasure of, you know, needing it in a production thing, because the things that I was building back then were they too big where I didn't have that kind of say, or too small that they didn't kind of need it. But it was definitely part of the industry, and it was cool.
jQuery, which is, obviously, jQuery is still valuable if you're using it, no shame zone here. But it is like a lot of what I use jQuery for has been replaced by modern JavaScript
API. Yeah, and we've talked about this in recent episodes too. I think I've made the connection at one point that, you know, WordPress loves to tell you how much of the web it powers, and it's like huge and amazing because it's kind of a bigger swath of technology, but jQuery is actually on more of the web than WordPress is.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, it's very useful. I think we shouldn't, I don't mean to denigrate it, but I'm just saying, I think a lot of people have moved away from it just because on new projects like Greenfield, just because a lot of what
a
lot of what it accomplished, you can do natively now. Require.js, which was like another script loading thing, like kind of like a pre-bundler, you know, Webpacky, browserify kind of bundler.
Kind of largely replaced by Webpack these days, yeah.
Or even now native, you know, ES6 imports, you know, like, which kind of on the cusp here. So
that one's like, weird. That's all. We need to have a show about that one. I love that it's been standardized and is useful and rolling out to browsers, but it seems like, well, I guess maybe it was designed to be HTTP2E, right? Cause it seems like it makes so many web requests that how can that be useful? But
how can it be useful? Agree. I talked to, this maybe, I don't know if this was, Bradley Meck was responsible for Node's implementation of HTML imports, and he confessed to me that it was a lot of action. Basically, he's just like, I don't know how it works, even though I implemented it. It's barely working. It's probably gotten better since then. That was some months ago, but he just was like, this is a rough place for the internet. And Node.js has like made some comments on, you know, require and
I don't even understand the basics of what makes it. I mean, it immediately seems hard to me. I mean, imagine you at import something and what you at import could at import anything else. So you basically have to build a theoretically infinite tree of things that load and depend on other things.
You're like at import foo from vague reference to some file. That's like intense anyway. But then the way it imports, it doesn't import as like a variable. It imports as something like totally different, almost like an instance or something, like a almost like a class, you know, but sounds it's not a variable. Grade.
But yeah, anyway, so require is still around though. Yeah, but not as hot of a topic, certainly.
For rich web UIs, in 2012, your options were Backbone or maybe Knockout, which is kind of wild, right? Like those aren't even in the kind of common talked about realm. So things, and then I remember Respond.js. That was a big thing with RWD, because I feel like in 2012, everyone was like, how do I do RWD, or responsive web design?
In JavaScript.
And it was like, yeah, so I'll import Respond.js from Filming Group, I think it was, and you like just basically shoehorn in media queries and all this stuff into like old IE6, 7, and 8, you know. And
I see. Yeah, it was like a CSS loader.
Yeah, and it was like nothing but, well, it was great. Solved problems, but it also created a few problems. But yeah, and so now in JavaScript.
That's funny to think about it. Yeah, it's like it feels so different now, but maybe it's not that different. I mean, certainly we have these new like virtual DOM state-based libraries, but yeah, is it that different?
Yeah, well, I was going to say like what's new. I feel like it's almost like there's the front-end libraries that you like include are different, because I feel like now it's more about like the frameworks you use to build with the thing, you know, npm and webpack, like how you install things and manage things and build things, like it's almost gone like full build chain focus, not like libs that solve problem focus. Does that make sense? Like I feel like in 2012 we were just like including libraries to like solve.
Did you include Modernizer problems? Because you needed to test if something was functional or not, and it seemed like a very straightforward. I need this because this. Whereas a large monolithic framework doesn't solve a direct problem, right? I guess you could argue that it does, but it's not like I need a yes or no answer to this, so I use this library. It's more like no, I have chosen to fall under the massive umbrella of this framework.
Yeah, no, it's like I'll npm install create React app to start my app, and it installs 1,500 of its buddies, and then now I can make websites, you know? Like, it's changed kind of differently, you know? It's sort of like you built the site, and then you, like, found the JavaScript you needed to kind of make it work, right? And then, but now it's like, well, now I installed all the JavaScripts, and then I built the thing. And then I use Webpack to kind of like rip out and try to like, you know, code split and tree shake and, you know, like basically whittle it down.
That's where it starts to feel very different.
Right? Like the like point of entry is, I feel like, opposite. Does that mean I'm going to go on record with that. Yep.
Cool.
The point of entry in web design has changed from the like top of funnel to the like what the user accepts to the back of funnel, what the developer creates. There, that's what I've said. Haha, I made a thing that people should write blog posts about.
You've just thought-leaded, I think.
I thought-led right there. Ooh, used all my thought juice, so I might need some more champagne.
Speaking of frameworks, so we're talking about mostly browser-level stuff, and that's what we talk about a lot on this show. But certainly, I don't know, just for whatever reason, things, you know, we don't talk about like Python very much, but we end up talking about things like content management systems, just because there's so many front-end developers that like live in a world in which they are building on top of a CMS of some kind. It feels like back then, or even slightly before that, there was like the big three were like WordPress, Drupal, and Joomla. And I feel I don't know if Joomla aged very well, but the Drupal and WordPress are still around, being as big as they ever were, I would think.
I think they're still stuck, though, in the versions that launched when we launched the show, like WordPress 3 or 4. WordPress was at 3. It's moved
to 4. I just went to the Joomla website too, and it looks pretty modernized too. Maybe it's still, I don't know if it's as big as it was then. Maybe it's bigger. Maybe I just have no idea what I'm talking about, but it seems like it's not dead, certainly.
Oh, yeah. No. So, yeah, I think it's still in development, but I think the conversation, like, which do you use, WordPress, Drupal, or Joomla, has, or Expression Engine, if you were like super fancy, you know, has changed quite a bit. You know, like if you're talking about CMSs, I mean, there's actually lots of choices. You know, it's like, you know, WordPress, Drupal, Craft CMS has kind of come up.
It's the new Expression Engine, and I'm standing, and they paid for part of this booth that I'm in. And we share an office with Craft CMS, just for the record. See? They are awesome.
There you go. Which in Paravel has projects on Craft. They're really great. But, you know, you can also do like static site generators kind of came up, and like you can build a site with a static generator. Like,
that's certainly part of the massive movement that's happening now. If backend frameworks are as popular as there ever were, there's now, in addition to that, this whole world of static building.
And even, I think you could go back to Karen McGrane's stuff, like, you know, just this idea of headless CMSs and all that, you know, like this idea that...
Decoupling the backend from how you're going to use that data ultimately. Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a big one. I mean, we didn't have smartwatches back then, you know, so it's all kind of changed, you know, like... since 6 years ago. So I think that's just,
it's funny,
just,
you know, it hasn't though. Like if you are going to use a big popular open source content management system, the only one, they're all PHP. That hasn't changed. There isn't all like PHP, a wildly popular
MySQL. I mean, yeah, maybe Postgres, but like, I think most of them are MySQL. I mean,
like other name than a big sites. Giant Ruby CMS, you know, I don't know that exists.
Typo 3. I don't know. But no, yeah, it's mostly like completely like, I don't know, PHP kind of owns that space. I mean, there's like Java CMSs, and I think we had like a question about .NET CMSs, and some people like suggested a whole bunch of them on Twitter, but I'm blanking about what they were. But yeah, like there's, you know, there are more options now or sort of different, but I don't know. The problem is sort of stays the same, you know? So compliments to WordPress. It's still like useful and or more useful than it was before, you know? So even though I say that, even though I've moved a lot of sites off of.
Right. And we just had a show where they're tiptoeing into React stuff, but it doesn't seem like they'll get away from the PHP thing ever. I don't know if they need to, or if that's a concern or not. And maybe it's fine. I don't know. It's just interesting to watch. Well, we're talking about then and now. So many things change that feel so big and different and new, and wow, I can't believe all the change that's happened in such a relatively short amount of time, but not the fact that, for example, all major CMSs work on PHP. How strange, huh?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we do kind of have like new databases like Mongo have kind of came up, and, you know, like these flat file sort of things, you know, Firebase didn't exist. But yeah, more or less, it's all the same thing. I guess we should kind of keep going because we are only halfway through a 300-minute episode.
Well, what else is like, what did we care about back then? What was like on top of mind?
Yeah, so I think I got into it with 2012. But like, I think the core question of 2012 was, how do I responsivize my, you know, my e-commerce site or whatever? It was, how do you do our responsive web design? And I feel like, now the like concerns when you like go to like build a website, I mean, I think it's still like, how does like the mobile first experience work, you know? And or I think that's still a big concern that people like get very involved in. But I think like performance, security, you know, third party stuff, you know, is all a huge concern. And then like that kind of with the JavaScript stuff, like rich UIs, like how are you going to do that rich UI? Which reminds me of Flash days, you know, like like you just use Flash to have the rich UI, but like, how are you going to do the rich UI, you know?
It almost seems like maybe not that RWD was a solved problem, but it's kind of taken more for granted these days. And now we're like, well, okay, that we have all these ways to build websites now that are pretty darn sweet. maybe this conversation has evolved. It's a higher level conversation. Now we can get back to, are we for sure building things that are great for our users? Are they secure for our users? Are they performant for our users? Are they solving our users' immediate problems? Can we do more for them? Can we make it easier to pay? Can we make it faster to communicate? Can we make it work offline? You know, the conversations have stepped up, I think, not stepped sideways, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, even like I do like A/B testing, you know, it's like, how can we test this with this, you know, for this? And it's just kind of wild, like what the concerns I feel have like grown quite considerably. I'm not sure if that's maybe just perspective or maybe I'm dealing with more problems than before, but it just seems, yeah, it's like we figured out how to responsive web design. Now we have to figure out all this other stuff, so...
Yeah, it's you know, and that is almost related to that Frank Chimero article too, and that things have gotten more complicated, and why is that? You know, is it some of just developers just complicating things because that's what we do, or is it, you know, I my writing about this was centered around the fact that it's kind of complicated because it has to be in a way, and that user expectations are on the rise, and what we're asking websites to do is just more than they were. Certainly 6 years ago, certainly definitely 10 years ago, you know, we're just building different kinds of sites, and the market for the low end sites that maybe at least I was thinking about back then when I made spin up a little site are different now. And that market isn't as there. There's not as much freelancing for a $2,000 site, which maybe was dominating some conversations back then because that market was way bigger or something, or at least my community was more circled around that. Whereas now the conversations are about, they're just about bigger projects. They're about websites that do different things.
Yeah. I think, Jasenia posted some slides about a flexible design system that serves all of Vox Media's properties.
And that fuels the conversation. Jasenia is doing amazing work on that. But that scope is huge. And you go to a conference and you listen to somebody from Slack talk about scaling. And then you talk about somebody from GitHub talk about testing or something. Like, these are massive. If these are the conversations that are dominating the industry and resonating with people, that means that the scope of what developers are doing and listening to and caring about are projects of scales that are much bigger than they used to be.
Yeah. It feels like the size of average website or something has gone, you know, exploded or quintupled. So that's interesting. All right. We got a few other, power categories. We can just kind of rifle through.
Okay.
I had a section called Came and Gone. So what are things that came up and then disappeared?
This is a great section. We should almost do a whole show on it. Like, it's because it's kind of nostalgia based. Like, thing that's just absolutely gone that used to be a big deal. I see you wrote Bower, which is funny because it does seem pretty.
Yeah, cool. And no hate if you're still using Bower. You know, but we've talked about it on the show before. I think even the development team has kind of said this is sort of end of lifing. We're kind of spinning this down. But yeah, like, you know, it was not even a thing back when we started the show. And then it became a huge, you know, this is how you do it. This is the best in front end performance practice. I gave talks on it, I think. And now it's just kind of Cricketville, you know, like I think
most people are moving to NPM. Things like this if we.
Yeah, like little things. Code schools came to mind, and not code schools still exist, and I still think they are valuable, like to learn a trade. But yeah, like the hype, I guess, cycle around code schools has sort of petered out and things like that. So, even some code schools have opened and closed in this short window. So,
certainly. This would be a fun one if people would write in about. What do you think if you've been developing, you've been in this industry for, say, 5 years, or let's use that 2012 target. What was the thing that was like for sure a thing in 2012? And it almost feels like if there was a BuzzFeed for tech articles, it would be like, here's 20 things that developers in 2012 only would know or whatever. I did a terrible job of headlining that, but you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah, and just to give you some perspective.
What's like the Crystal Pepsi of 2000?
Let me give you, this is fun. I went to my blog to go see the articles I wrote in 2012.
Yes.
Because they are awesome, Chris. Uncle Dave's old padded box, putting some content inside a aspect ratio box.
Still talked about, though. It's not totally embarrassing.
I want to get released from this prison. again, more padded boxes, making fluid video JS, making video JS fluid for RWD. And then I wrote a post. I only wrote four posts this year in 2012, but M limited content, like basically having max width 40 M's or whatever
for wow.
content container.
Weird.
That was the concerns back then, man. And then can you believe it? And not.
There's some of mine. I had a, let's see, fighting the space between inline block elements. I bet still people find that once in a while.
You know,
not solved.
It's always margin left minus 4 pixels. That's easy. Done. That should be the whole article.
Viewport size typography, still a topic. SAS versus less, hilarious.
Ooh.
HTML for icon font usage, still out there for sure. I mean, there's things that feel outdated, but are still like surprisingly not.
I wrote my totally Mo Pixels Mo Problems article.
Responsive images was just kind of early, right? We were kind of defining the problem back then, and crossing our fingers for somebody picking up the.
Yeah, it kind of blew up, you know, and that was kind of a wild, kind of.
Everyone, I think.
Alyssa Park like came to me and they're like, we need somebody to write about this. Could you write about it? And I was like, I'll do my best. Oops.
So. Did something about page transitions. That still hasn't shaken out exactly yet. I know that there's been some recent work on that. The idea being that one of the reasons to go with a kind of all the complexity of a single page app is that moving around that app can feel so fast and nice and performant and kind of what our users want and expect and comes from native app land. But could we get there closer if we allowed for page transitions between even when the URL changes in the traditional way, can we still make it feel like an SPA? That would be a big deal. Totally still relevant. I was talking a lot about pseudo elements for some reason back then. That was a fun topic. And there was like talk of having multiple pseudo elements. Still, it's still rather weird, right? That we get before and after, but you're totally limited to those two. If you need two
no more and no less. Yeah. We can't do more than that. Why would you need more than that?
Oh, fun. That's fun. Look back in the archives.
Dig through the archives. I think so. Time wise, we're halfway through our 300 episode minute episode here, but I thought I'd just wrap it up here and kind of with the question of what are the conversations gonna be in 2024?
Oh,
6 years from now, episode 600. What are the conversations?
It makes me think about how technology evolves and evolves quickly, but humans evolve very slowly. So I'm kind of hoping that whatever the conversations about tech happen to be, that the conversations are about, are we doing a good job for the people that are using the things that we're using? So I hope that conversation never dies. Are they fast? Are they safe? Are they accessible? Are they all those things? We're still going to be talking about them then, I promise. And they'll be, you know, hopefully there's going to be steps back, but hopefully it's like 3 steps forward, 2 steps back, you know, because we always seem to screw it up somehow. So let's just hope it's a little better than it was.
Yeah, no, I think there's a long trend of trying to apply technology to solve all the problems. And too often they're like human problems and we forget that. And we just try to techno our way out of it. But in fact, you've like affected people's lives, whether that's, you know, using some fancy framework and then turns out it's inaccessible, but it's, you know, too bad. It's already rolled out to a bunch of people. Or it's, you know, I think we just had that episode on machine learning. I think about that too, you know, like as we yield more to robots, what happened? Is it safe? Is it, you know, good for the user? You know, like, you run that credit report the AI driven credit report? Does it, you know, is it fair, just, you know, does it help somebody, you know, like move on in their life, you know, or, mm-hmm. or that's, those are big questions. And it's weird that it's kind of like from, you know, 12 years or 6 years ago, 12 years in the future, 2024. But 6 years ago, it was just like, how do I make a cool website with like a, you know, a dancing banana like GIF? How do I do that in CSS? And now it's a lot more like, okay, how do we do this really well? I think for me, I feel like the internet is headed towards a breaking point on privacy, like with all the hacks and the leaks and the troll farms and the, you know, what Facebook trackers and ads and all that. I feel like we are headed towards a pretty intense boiling point for all of that stuff. So I'm interested to hear how it shakes down. And I just wonder what, you know, like, do we like, do, is our privacy, are we just going to give it up for convenience of cool products and AI and, you know, a little talking hockey puck in our house? Or are we, is it like, or what are we going to do? How's that going to go? I think that's going to be an ongoing thing. So,
yeah. Yep. It will. If I had to guess, it's going to go the wrong way. It's going to be like, we just accept more and more kind of corporate oversight, yeah. and governmental
overthrow. Your bank account, it's just public now.
Yeah.
It's just public knowledge. It goes into the public domain.
I worry that that's where we're headed. Cause I'm a part of it. I'm not as mad as I should be when I should be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Another one I had written down and is Houdini. See, Houdini. We hear all about it.
There's three. Right now it's some people know about it. No, I don't think there's massive excitement about it, but there's murmurs that that's a big deal for the industry. It could be that, because in a way it allows you to kind of rewrite what CSS can do, like from the syntax level to what it's painted to the screen. So in a world in which it's implemented in all browsers and it's this amazing low-level language and developers get pumped about it, really could change the face of what the web can look like and do. Do you foresee that being the way, or the other way being, it was weird, nobody took advantage of it and it just kind of went by the wayside?
Yeah, I don't know. The reason I wrote it down was every browser is invested in this. Like, they are doing this. They are saying like, okay, we're going to open up low level APIs for developers to kind of do things with. And I think the logic there is sort of like you want some weird thing in CSS? Cool. We don't have to code it. You code it. You know, you just,
that's it. Right? It's a passing of the buck, but in a good way. It's this alleviates some of the stress of browser menus and spec people of being like, is this a good idea for the web? Houdini says, I don't know if it is or not. You implement it and we'll see. If it takes off on Houdini, then we can evolve the language. So I think the carrot is there for browsers to be like, oh, this alleviates some stress from our what we choose to do.
But I sort of wonder if the role of a front end designer or something is almost like the role of like a shader specialist for like 3D art. You know, it's basically, you know what, you know what Houdini shaders, you know, or like mm-hmm. worklets is what they're called. Houdini worklets give you whatever effect, you know, whether that's the ripple effect on the button. So you're kind of just turned into this manager of all these kind of jQuery like plugins to like make websites cool and interactive or something. So
I think that
could be like a big change to our jobs in the future. Just because two things, you'll have to know a lot about JavaScript because these things are all JavaScript. I also wonder if they're going to like turn into WebAssembly things. Cause I imagine
maybe,
you know, you do.
Is the internet going to be fast enough where we don't, because you have to ship a bunch of code for this thing to happen. So I wonder if the conversation then becomes, you know, all y'all using Houdini plugins to do all kinds of fancy stuff. I, an old school web person, choose to just use what the browser already knows how to do. Thus, my site is more performant than your site. You know?
Yeah, no. Hey, and also like there's probably going to be a market for blog posts on like Houdini fallbacks, you know, like mm-hmm. making your Houdini progressively enhanced, because not every browser is going to hit with Houdini at the same time. That's not going to happen ever. So like, that's kind of interesting stuff. And then the only other thing I had, just conversations, and I hope this isn't a conversation. I hope it's dead. I hope it's gone. But AMP, which, you know,
I'll bet my bottom dollar in again, I'm making a lot of big bets. I should stop doing this. But in 5 years or 6 years or whatever the times is we're talking about, we're not going to be talking about AMP. It's either going to evolve to the point where it's something else, or it's dead. That's too long for this thing to stick around. Is people adopt it and they drop it, and some people kind of like it, and Google's pushing it, but nobody's clapping their hands that loudly, and it just doesn't seem like it has the right legs for a 5-year run.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it points to like that scenario, you know, where a single company introduces an alternative web standard and then has enough leverage to kind of push it. Like, I think that's sort of like this like anti Tim Berners-Lee kind of view of the web. You know, I think it was all supposed to be kind of consortium based, you know, but now it's like a single company, under a guise of being open source and things like that, like pushes a standard. And I think it's kind of, I think we'll be talking about ramifications from that or whatever, you know, like did we all fold to Google or
there's all the evidence in the world that the only thing that publishers care about is getting more eyeballs, right? Like manipulating
ad revenue.
Right. Well, yeah.
But yeah. And you know, what is that, you know, but if everyone blocks, you know, even Chrome is shipping with an ad blocker here. So if everyone blocks ads, like either ads are going to get better or people are just going to start mining cryptocurrency on your device from the first party. So, hey, welcome to the future. If you have predictions, send them in. And I'd be interested. We've talked about a whole sci-fi show, kind of like science fiction-y show. So if you got cool ideas.
That'd be fun to do that, you know, or in addition to or separately or maybe in the same one as if we actually spent some time and straight up thought about like 10 years out predictions. Like, can we really guess? Because it's an opportunity to get really weird with things.
Like, cool. No, I think I got one, but do I do it now? I should save it. I'll save it. I'll tell you after this show because it's too juicy. So, all right.
That's a good carrot to keep listening to Shop Talk Show.
Yep, for the next 10 years. Episode 900. We're looking forward to that.
Yeah. So,
all right. Hey, Chris, we did it. 300.
Yay.
Amazing. And,
dude, thanks, Dave, for sticking with me and this whole time. That is so awesome. Oh, I count you among
say the same
one of my best friends. It's fantastic. And thanks, everybody, for listening, of course. It's just cool. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening. I mean, you guys obviously make the show. I mean, it's a question and answer podcast. Surprise. We can't do it without your questions, to give our terrible answers to. So we really owe it to all of y'all who have sent in and, you guys really make the show, guys and girls. So thank you very much. We really appreciate that. And if you've ever star-hearted or favorited this show in your podcatcher of choice, you have also had an impact on our show's growth and sustainability. So thank you very much. We really appreciate that. If you hate your job, Chris, within the last 6 years has invented a job board for you. People want to hire people like you. And it's available on our website, shoptalkshow.com/jobs.
It's going great too. There's lots of good stuff on there. I think, and I think you'll find, maybe you'll just by looking up and down the job board, you might see how times have changed over that would be an interesting metric of change from in the last 6 years is what are people hiring for these days?
Yeah, imagine like a 2012 job board. You know, I mean, I'm sure you could even pull that up. You could like go to archive or whatever.org or whatever. But yeah.
Our job is just for front end developers. I'm not even sure we could have pulled that off in 2012.
Oh, I'm for sure we had a show that was like, is front end developer a job title? You know, I'm sure we had that. That's wild. Anyway, so thank you, listener. Again, it's all because of y'all. So thank you. And thanks to all of our guests, hundreds of guests that have come on the show and blessed, hashtag blessed us with your knowledge. We really appreciate that. So With that, Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Can't wait for 301, man. Chopdocshow.com.